Chapter 13. Kral walked as an inspector would walk. Not too fast, not too slow, head held high, daring anyone else to look at him. It had not been possible to do more than a cursory clean of his uniform. He was painfully aware of what a shabby spectacle he must have looked then, with the last strands of the Magister's nutrient slime still glistening on his epaulets. He could see the shocked stares from the bustling adepts, hastily averted. One of them, sooner or later, would start making inquiries. He did not take the same route back as he had done coming in. Those paths were too exposed, too open to the many scrutiny lenses that floated like hummingbirds up in the globe-lit vaults. The research he had commissioned from Hook paid off now, and he was able to take a circuitous path up to different landing stages, passing through less exalted chambers, refectories, boiler rooms, communal recreation spaces, where section superintendents read out ministerium-approved moral texts from high pulpits. Gorgias seemed more or less recovered, though the crustaceous mass of sensors across his cranium had been disarranged, and some fault in them now made him more repetitious than ever.
"Rapido, rapido, rapido,"
he hissed, at least having the sense to keep his chirping to a barely audible level.
"Must get out, must get out, must get out."
Kral barely looked around him as they travelled, projecting the air of an official calmly going about his business. Out of the corner of his eye, though, it was evident that something had unsettled the adepts, and it wasn't just him. Several chambers were stuffed with technicians, all poring over their bulky cogitator terminals. He heard expressions of disbelief, followed by the patter of feet as menials ran to report whatever disturbing findings were coming in.
"You said you had an incoming transmission," Kral said under his breath as they passed along a semi-deserted corridor with only a few cowled adepts clustered at the far end.
"Lost, lost, lost,"
Gorgias blurted. Clearly, something had gone wrong with his processing units. Kral's own combeat had picked up damage during the struggle with the Magister, and now coursed with white noise when accessed. The lack of contact with the outside world made him uneasy. The Nexus was vast and heavily protected. It would be all too easy to be buried here. They reached an elevator station and took an unoccupied cage up as far as it would go. As the levels slattered by, flickering and jerking, the background hubbub of disquiet only grew. He caught a fleeting glimpse of Mercatura troops running and half reached for Sanguine, only to see them tearing down a long slope heading elsewhere. He began to dare to hope. They were making good progress, and the entire citadel was strangely distracted, suddenly focused on some other infiltration or system fault. A series of more populated chambers followed, each clustered with cranial-plugged servitors and sensorium adepts with high-crested helms. Astropathic relay crystals hung from the ceiling, swimming with pulsing light. The interpreter lenses were crammed with text, as if suddenly half the worlds of the Imperium were all sending in transmissions at the same time. Here, too, the milling staff were far too busy to pay attention to him, no matter how outlandish his appearance, and he made it up to the departure level for the main transport berths.
"Almost there," he murmured.
Perhaps that overconfidence did it. Perhaps that sentiment offended whichever machine spirits governed the operation of this place. He and Gorgias slipped into a narrow walkway, running up from the main concourse and into the feeder lines for the shuttles. The place initially appeared deserted, and the same blue light filtered out from wall-set lumens. As they reached the end of the tunnel, though, five figures stepped out of the circular access portal to greet them. Four were Mercatura troopers carrying las pistols. The fifth was Bajan, looking bilious in the unnatural lighting.
"That's far enough, I think," the adept said, barring passage through the portal.
"What is the meaning of this?"
Kral demanded, adopting Calavine's demeanour once again.
"Just what it looks like, Inspector," Bajan smiled. "Did you get anything out of the Magister? I'd be impressed if you did. No one else can. I wonder if the two things might be connected."
As Bajan spoke, Kral assessed the preparedness of the guards around him. They looked competent and alert, which was an irritant. He was still in considerable pain from the earlier encounter. Taking four of them on, plus anything Bajan could muster, might well be asking too much. He had no idea what Gorgias was capable of adding to the situation.
"That doesn't concern you,"
Kral said, staying just on the right side of surliness. You'd have been better to have taken my advice and got off-world. When this comes out, it won't be coming out anywhere, though, will it? Bajan said. I've done some digging of my own, and I don't quite believe you are who you say you are. I also don't quite believe your business here is as sanctioned as it should be, and that worries me a very great deal. This is a foolish game, Bajan. Stand aside. Something's going on, Bajan said. The whole Nexus is unsettled, and I can't but think that it has something to do with you. Surrender your weapon and call off your skull. I think it's time we spoke again. Kral began to isolate the options. He could potentially take out the two troopers closest to him, but Gorgias, in his current state, might struggle to tie up the other two. It would have to be done soon, though the prospect of it and the likely outcome made his heart sink. He let a little dose slip into his bloodstream, giving him the boost he needed. Just as he tensed to move, though, another figure ducked clumsily through the portal. A scatty-looking woman with green-tinged hair, dressed in an off-white secretarial tabard. She was bearing a pile of data slates.
"My lord," she said, bowing clumsily at Bajan, "brought straight to you, as requested."
The adept shot a glance at her, scowling in irritation.
"Not now," he hissed. "I'll look at them back in the..."
Then his eyes went wide, his hand flew to his throat, and he choked up a glut of blood. The data slates fell from the woman's fingers, clattering on the floor, to reveal the tiny spike pistol nestled in her palm. Kral moved instantly, barging one trooper into the wall with an elbow thrust to his throat. He snapped Sanguine out with the next breath, hitting the second in the stomach. The woman fired again to knock out the third, and Gorgias, demonstrating he still had command of at least some of his senses, accounted for the fourth with a flurry of needles that smashed through his helm visor. It was all over in a second. Kral made sure the first one wouldn't be getting up again with a sharp stamp to the throat, then glanced over at Bajan's immobile body.
"Impeccable timing, as ever, Anila," he said.
"A pleasure, lord,"
Anila replied, pulling the wig from her scalp and shaking her head to clear the flecks of green.
"The transport has been cleared to depart and is ready to detach, though we may need to use our initiative a little. This place is in some disarray."
"I'd noticed," said Kral, stepping through the portal doors and hurrying up the ramp.
"What's going on?"
"Unsure, lord," said Anila, following him, "but it seems widespread. We've had transmissions from Corvain, too. Did you receive them?"
Something about the way she said that made his stomach turn.
"No, I was sealed away," he said, reaching for the airlock release valve. "Tell me, swiftly. I fear we may have been away too long."
Rivas marched down the long central hall, flanked by the remains of his command group. They would be the last ones up before the Corvus ring was sealed. The very fact he had been forced to enact the order so soon troubled him intently. The invasion had been so sudden, then prosecuted so rapidly, that there had been little time to do anything other than fight. But that didn't erase the nagging voice in his head, reminding him in every snatch of rare downtime that he had brought this on the Citadel. He, who had been charged with defending it, in the full knowledge that any slip would attract the attention of those with the power to snuff them out, had smuggled in the tripwire corpse rigged to betray involvement and send out a signal to those listening. The device must have been extremely sophisticated, both to have evaded detection by the routine quarantine scans and to have pushed its comburst past Corvain's scaffold of transmission protectors. It may be that no one could have reasonably foreseen the eventuality, given that bodies were routinely brought in and out of the Citadel in pursuit of various investigations. It may be that it was not in any sense his fault. That did not make him feel better. Every soldier who had died under his command during the grubby engagement stabbed at his conscience. He had fought harder than any of them, staying longer at the barricades and taking his fury out on those who had violated the portals. But that did not assuage his guilt for long, for they were still losing so very badly. Khazad was at his side now, just as she had been since the start. His opinion of her martial prowess had, if anything, grown.
He had watched her single-handedly plough into an enemy squad, at close range, as always, cleaving them apart with her gold-flecked blade. If he had somehow been able to call on 50 such fighters, this thing might still be salvageable. As it was, the outcome was remorselessly zeroing down to the one scenario he had been dreading from the start. Up ahead, at the top of a steep flight of coal-black stairs, stood the last of the unsealed Corvus Ring portals. It was blunt and solid, a monolith of moulded adamantium surmounted by the inquisitorial skull and banded with force-repelling struts. On either side of the great doors were anti-personnel bolter turrets, each one linked to great magazines of ammunition. Once shut, those doors were formidable obstacles. The final members of his command trudged wearily up the steps, backing up with their faces turned towards the hall, weapons still trained just in case the enemy made it here too soon. Khazad looked over at him, her helm banded with blood.
"We go in now?" she asked.
No doubt she'd prefer to stay outside, where she could engage the enemy face to face, but even she'd stopped protesting the strategy a while back, aware of the risk of losing everything. Rivas waited.
"Almost," he said.
Even as he spoke the words, Spinoza emerged from the gloom of the hall's entrance lobby, striding at the head of Talis's detachment, still dressed in her Arbites garb and looking as ravaged as all the rest of them. To her credit, the interrogator didn't ask him what had happened. She didn't fulminate or demand answers then and there, but merely acknowledged him with a weary nod. "Any more to come?" she asked.
"No, Lord. You're the last."
"Then we go in."
"By your command."
They trooped up the stairs. As they went, the first sounds of pursuit welled up from the chambers below. Booby traps going off, blowing the tight net of corridors into rubble, hopefully keeping the pursuers bogged down for a while yet. Rivas ushered Spinoza over the threshold before stepping after her and issuing the command to seal. Huge blast doors rolled closed, grinding inward from their sockets to slam closed across the breach. Long adamantium bolts hissed tight, and the edges crackled with the telltale gauze of molecular shielding. The chamber beyond was considerably smaller than the one they'd just passed through, and already congested with bodies and equipment. Wounded stormtroopers and security personnel limped off to be tended to, while those still combat-capable took up positions well back from the doors. Spinoza removed her helm, revealing the depth of her shock at what had taken place.
"So, what now, Captain?" she demanded.
Rivas said nothing, but led her, Hegain, Talis, and Khazad into an anteroom, itself guarded by heavy doors. The walls were reinforced metal, lined with banks of picked screens and cogitator consoles. A single control column, fashioned from glossy alabaster, rose up from the center of the floor. More Inquisition skulls surmounted it, ringing a single steel plunger.
"The Lord Crowl made no signal," Rivas reported. "I do not know if he ever received my transmission. Soon after the assault, all our comms were jammed, so there is no way of knowing if he will return."
Khazad sunk down to her haunches. She looked spent.
"Then we must hold out here long enough for him to organize a relief force," said Spinoza.
Rivas didn't quite know what to say to that. Kral was a powerful man in some ways, but that did not extend to being able to summon armies on demand. In any case, one glimpse outside the walls showed that the entire urban sector seemed to be suffering from riots and looting. This was just a small part of some greater upheaval, and the authorities, if indeed they had any significant presence in the locale, were likely already busy with more pressing concerns. Before he could formulate a reply, though, the doors behind him opened again, and two of his troops entered, dragging the body of an enemy warrior between them. Irunian shuffled along in their wake, looking paler than ever. The chirurgeon normally cast a fussy, confident profile in his own domains. Now, for reasons that no doubt echoed Rivas's own, he appeared very much diminished. The captured soldier was helmless, and a long, livid weal ran down the right-hand side of his face. His eyes were vague, and his head lolled heavily on his shoulders. He had a black web of augmetics along one temple, and his skin was an almost pigmentless white. The stormtroopers dumped him in a metal chair, then lashed his wrists and ankles to the frame.
"Who are you?"
Spinoza demanded. The man looked up at her. He was scared. His gauntlets gripped the edge of the chair.
Operative 457, he replied. Squad 34.
Spinoza drew closer to him.
No. Who sent you?
The man looked briefly confused.
I don't know, he said.
Spinoza struck him on the cheek, and his head snapped painfully to one side.
Who sent you?
She asked again. The man winced and struggled to answer. For a second his lips formed up, but then his gaze went blank. He looked up at her again, now properly scared.
I don't know, he said.
Spinoza clenched her fist, ready to strike again, but Irunian laid a restraining hand on her forearm.
Selective mind wipe, he said. Good work, too. You could beat him to a pulp and he couldn't tell you anything.
Spinoza glared at the man in fury, looking as if she would like to test the hypothesis. Rivas walked up to the captive and began to study his armour. It was high-quality carapace plate, well-fitted, though of no design he had ever encountered.
"What is your mission?"
he asked. The man swallowed.
"Take the citadel. Recover its master alive, if possible. If not, destroy it." "Where are you planning on taking him?"
Rivas pressed. The man looked panicked again.
"He doesn't know that either," said Irunian. All he's able to do is repeat the mission parameters. I doubt his commanders are even present in the battlefield. Yet.
Spinoza turned on the chirurgeon.
There must be something you can do. A mind wipe can be unpicked.
Irunian shrugged.
Some can. We have other subjects in the lab right now being worked on, but it takes time.
Rivas shook his head.
We don't have that time.
Then we must make time, said Spinoza impatiently. We are behind the bastion. We still have a fighting force to hold them. This is not over yet.
Hegain looked at Rivas. Talis looked at the floor. Rivas drew in a long breath.
We have a breathing space, he said. The citadel's heaviest defences were on the outer walls and the main gates. If they breach those so rapidly, we must assume they can breach these too. And in any case, they have control of much of the citadel already. If they decide that their true quarry is not to be found here, or it becomes too much trouble to break us open, there will be ways for them to destroy the entire place.
Khazad looked up, a fierce light in her eyes.
Then we rest, just a moment, and get back into fight,
she hissed.
Better to die on feet than like rats in trap.
Thrown, she was admirable.
That is one option,
Rivas admitted. Spinoza clenched her fists in what seemed like a reflexive movement.
In that case, Captain, just what is the point of this exercise?
She asked testily.
We fall back only to have them come after us. We hole up in here to find that they can chisel us out. Are you merely finding us slower ways to die, or is there some purpose to this constant withdrawal you have yet to share?
Rivas looked over at the control column.
Of course there is a purpose, he said quietly.
Several of the picked screens flickered into life. A vid capture showed the chamber at the base of the stairs outside, suddenly filling with ricochets. The automatic gun turrets had opened fire. From below them, the steady crack of ammo drums emptying made the floors vibrate. Amid the thundering cycles of ordnance, something bulky and armoured was advancing, sparking with impacts, but coming on all the same.
Then I think,
Spinoza said coolly, her eyes turning from the monitors to hold his own,
as we are clearly running out of time, that you had better tell me what it is.
They did not take the same craft for the outward journey. Anila had arrived at the Nexus in a Mercatura transit flyer, and it had always been the intention to withdraw in that one, if possible. The flyer had been berthed in one of the less prestigious spots within the fortress's colossal docking innards, all the better for slipping away undetected. They were not the only ones, though. Whole ranks of ship tethers were active, flickering with marker lights and running with electro pulses. The internal comms were clogged, filled with requests for disembarkation and increasingly strident demands for the lock claws to be released. Anila took up position in the pilot's seat, pulling the headset on and powering up the main console. Crowl settled in beside her, his bones aching. Gorgias spun around somewhere behind them, mumbling repetitive dirges.
"I must apologize for my appearance," Crowl said, pulling the restraint straps on. "That was an unpleasant place."
"Noted, Lord," Anila said, her fingers dancing across the console.
"I didn't like it in there much myself."
There was a heavy clank, and the shuttle chassis thunked downwards. A hiss followed, and then the tinny slide of comms lines withdrawing. Crowl leaned back against the headrest.
"Everyone's keen to leave, it seems."
"There has been considerable turbulence within the last few hours," Anila said, opening up power to the thrusters. "A lot of the adepts have opted to get out if they can."
"What caused that? The riots?"
"I do not know, Lord."
The shuttle structure trembled as its motive force came up against the hold claws. Ahead of them, dozens of craft were filtering out of the narrow canyon and towards the narrow sliver of the night sky beyond. One ship, a merchant's urban skimmer by its profile, seemed to have got stuck, either because its pilot had powered up too quickly or because the administrators had refused it permission to leave. Its engines had flared up, flooding the metal cliffs behind it with plasma. If that didn't get resolved quickly, there would be an almighty explosion soon.
"Is that likely to happen to us?"
Crowl asked, watching it calmly. The shuttle's holding claw cracked open, and they floated free of the berth.
"I made sure it wouldn't," Anila said, concentrating on the press of traffic ahead.
"You really are very good, Anila," said Crowl.
They fell in amongst the other vessels, slowly drifting along the canyon and further out from under the Nexus's shadow. The patch of sky ahead steadily grew, although it was darker than before and seething with storm clouds.
"You said there had been transmissions from Corvain," Crowl said.
"One, Lord."
Anila played Revis's message over the cockpit's Audex. Crowl frowned.
"I don't like the sound of that. You received nothing more?"
"That was the last I heard. I could not establish a link back, and I could not reach you either."
"When we are clear of the perimeter checks, drive this craft as hard as you dare."
"There was another transmission," she said, ducking a little lower to edge past a lumbering atmospheric transporter.
The sky ahead was now plainly visible, a mottled patch of ripped clouds shifting closely like stirred coal dust.
"I was unable to open it directly as it came in from the representative's office. Do you wish me to shunt it to you now?"
Crowl frowned.
"Do it."
A lens rose up from a device on the console in front of him, unfolding a bundled ident reader as it did so. A sigil flickered into ghostly life across it, the skull inset eye of the Ordos. A scatter of verification runes followed, indicating that the transmission came from the chambers of the inquisitorial representative Cleopatra Arx. Such direct communication was extremely rare. The various fortresses and conclaves operating on Terra were generally expected to go about their business unimpeded. Crowl reached forward, taking his rosette out from its cache at his breast and pressing it to the ident reader. He then leaned forward for a retinal scan.
"Crowl, Erasmus, Ordo Hereticus," he said, letting the logic engine process his voice pattern.
Only then did the screen clear of the sigil and fill with tracking runes.
"Priority message to all members of the Holy Ordos of the Emperor's Inquisition operating on Terra or within standard void passage range of Terra, issued by the Office of the Representative to the High Council. Following irrefutable evidence obtained from scryers and portenders stationed within the inner observatories of the Ordo Malleus, this world is currently subject to a theta-grade anomaly warning, according to the Karcher scale. All operatives and agents, staff and retainers of the Holy Orders present on the Throne World are advised to travel immediately to locations within or adjacent to the Outer Palace precincts, where secure communications will be established for subsequent bulletins. No guarantees can be given that the anomaly level will not rise in subsequent announcements. This message supersedes all previous instructions.
Temporal authorities advise that unrest across all districts is significant and rising, with no assurance that protection will continue to be extended beyond the highest-tier assets identified in the Standard Operational Manual's crisis lists. Warning is duly given. No further broadcast messages on this subject will be given outside of the designated muster precincts. The Emperor protects. Kral's brow furrowed, and he clasped his hands together. In his long years of service on Terra, no such transmission had ever been made. Unbidden, his mind immediately flashed back to the horror of the tunnels under the palace itself, the warrens of darkness where that creature had slithered, the pleading face of Rassilo as she tried to persuade him not to intervene.
"They cannot repair the throne. You understand that? You see what that means?"
Anila increased the power to the engine slightly, pulling up towards the Nexus's outer rim. The tormented sky opened up above them.
"Do you wish to give me fresh orders, Lord?" she asked carefully.
Kral didn't reply immediately. Everything about this was troubling in the extreme. The air of unrest and anger had been growing for weeks. Perhaps it had already been there during Sanguinala itself. You could never have told then, for that was always an occasion of religious frenzy. He had been so caught up in his own hunt since then, unable to sleep, unable to rest, that he had barely given it consideration. Perhaps that was as it should be. His holy calling was not, and never had been, to investigate the structural misalignments of the ether. That was for his esteemed colleagues of the Ordo Malleus. But the signs had been there. He had his responsibilities.
"No," he said, shutting down the terminal.
"Maintain course for Corvain. Captain Rivas would not have made contact without good reason. I wish to learn what that was."